You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. October is here, one of our favorite months for many different reasons.
It's spooky, and I love all things Halloween.
And pumpkin spice everything. We've been here for it since September, but October is really when you let your pumpkin spice freak flag fly.
Fly, girl, fly. Plus, you get that sweatshirt weather all cozy with cider.
Most importantly, October is National Seafood Month.
The best month ever!
Unless you're probably in seafood sales, but you know, whatever.
We're excited for it. And we've got a lot of big stories from the week to run through, like new retail products and sushi-crazed bears. Plus, we've got Undercurrent News co-founder and editor-in-chief Tom Seaman joining us to spill the latest fish oil on what's happening with radioactive shrimp. And reporter Barb Dean Simmons is calling in to share some insights from the recent Fisheries Council of Canada meeting.
But before we get going, a quick thank you to our sponsor, Wisefish. For more than 30 years, Wisefish has helped seafood businesses simplify the way they work. From aquaculture and wild catch to processing and sales, Wisefish brings everything together in one integrated platform. Find out more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
Sushi bear.
You can't hold it in any longer, can you?
No, this story's crazy. And also sad because people were injured. But this past week, a bear went on a rampage in a sushi section of a supermarket in Numata City, which is about 80 miles north of Tokyo. And according to reports, there were about 40 people just doing their normal Tuesday evening grocery shopping when around 7:30 p.m., a bear just entered the premises, was like, I'm also going for my weekly salmon. A supermarket manager told a local news outlet that the bear didn't seem interested in food, but became agitated when it couldn't figure out how to exit the store. And reports say he ransacked the fish and sushi sections before stamping on avocados in the fruit section.
We've got our Undercurrent reporter and pal Masa based in Japan. So we, of course, had to talk to him about it. And he said it's big news in Japan and that the joke is there's very few salmon return this year. So the bear also needs to buy it at the supermarket.
But it also proves what Circana's Chris Dubois was saying the other week in Cartagena at the Responsible Seafood Summit. Everyone, whether you're human or a wild bear, everyone loves the convenience that retail sushi provides. So now that I've detoxed off the coffee a bit.
Finally.
It was intense. I also have to say that Jacob and I were like stolen away in a secret room. So we were like, you know, waiting to get like caught like using this space and someone being like, we're supposed to have a meeting in here. What are you guys doing?
But we were just like pumping out podcast interviews.
We've got to go. No, I want to share a little bit more about global trends presented last week at the Global Seafood Alliance event, and Sushi Bear presented that opportunity for me. So this probably won't come as a surprise to many, but sushi, in large part due to the size of the category in Japan, is the most popular seafood category globally, making up 33% of the share of global seafood servings. So in addition to getting to hear from Chris Dubois of Circana, we also got to hear from Matt Craze of Spheric Research, who, small plug, I will be doing a webinar with on our land-based aquaculture report in the coming weeks. So keep an eye out for that. But Matt Craze, he also with Spheric Research, just put out a sushi report called Beyond Sushi. And it takes a deep dive into who sushi consumers are. It's 40% of US adults, which I thought it would be kind of more.
That would be more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's saying 40% out of total 221 million, 40% have eaten sushi in this past year, 6% only doing supermarket sushi, which I can't believe there's anybody that's only doing supermarket sushi.
Expand your horizons, people. They have the gas station segment yet?
No, they do not have gas station sushi yet. I meant to say restaurant sushi only, that's 18%. And then both is 76%. So talking with Jacob about this, he was saying that he does it a lot with his kids as like an an easy go-to, convenient, like, let's just get them something healthy and take it to go in
and
the
they
car.
even have it in schools now, the little California rolls, which is great.
Does your schools have that?
I'm not sure, but I feel like I've heard about it.
I've heard of it. Yeah, I know. When we, I feel a couple of years ago, we were at
I think they
GSMC.
started in the intermediate schools around here.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember hearing somebody at GSMC a couple of years ago saying his kid has it at his school. I'm like, what? I'm like, do you send them to a private? So I hope they're boarding school, sir. No, the report's really interesting. So I'll direct a link to it. But again, it's a real deep dive into sushi. It's not about seafood. It's about the experience and just who the type of the sushi consumers are. And again, I think it's just a really interesting, you know, topic to look into is with the growth that we're seeing now. I know by us, Lauren, we have our first conveyor belt sushi place coming into Freehold Mall.
Ooh, I didn't
Kura
know
Sushi.
That.
Yeah. And my husband has been talking about conveyor belt sushi for years. Maybe he was in Hawaii or I don't know, he's lived all over. And he would tell me about like stacking up the plates and how like the yellow plate would be there.
Yes.
And never seen it really, but there's one coming by us and we'll have to go check it out. Cause I think that's.
We, as in me and you, not
Yes,
you
not
and
my
your husband,
husband.
right?
No.
Okay, thank
Always
you.
the plans are always you and I. The plans are always you and I.
Moving along to our favorite ongoing seafood drama, Radioactive Shrimpgate. Products are still being recalled in the US, with the Food and Drug Administration posting the most recent recall announcement for raw, frozen, easy peel white shrimp from Kirkland, Washington-based Seaport Products on October 1st.
Now, the US government has given Indonesian shrimp exporters in the country's two main production regions 28 days to meet its new import certification requirements to enter the market. Joining us on the pod now to explain this new import certification requirement is Undercurrent Editor-in-Chief Tom Seaman.
Tom, this is the exact opposite of what U.S. importers were hoping for, especially after it was discovered that the source of the radioactive isotope cesium-137 or CS-137 wasn't in the ponds, but likely something dispersed airborne into the packaging from a steel factory. So what do you got? What are the updates here? Tell us more.
Yeah, so things really seem to have gone from bad to worse for the Indonesian shrimp processing sector and farming sector too, with this latest development. So yeah, on October the 3rd, the FDA issued a note essentially saying that all of the Indonesian shrimp processors in Lampung and Java, which one of my sources told me account for pretty much 99% of the country's exports to the US, all the processors in those regions are on what they're calling a yellow list, which essentially means they need to have their products certified as essentially radiation free by October the 31st. And then this October the 31st date, there was a lot of confusion around this because people were debating whether this is a ship by date or an arrival date. Yesterday, so that was on Wednesday night, I was working on the story late in London. I got note from sources in Indonesia that the government has advised the sector that this is indeed a arrival date. So basically what the government has said is that Indonesian shrimp companies in Lampung and Java should stop shipping to the US because there's a high chance that, you know, with the timeline here, we're talking, you know, really only a couple of weeks. There's obviously no chance that the product will make it there in time. It obviously throws up in the air what happens to product which is on the water and on the way to the US because there really isn't much time before October 31st. So the industry's cut is really in a scramble here to sort this situation out. And it's even worse for BMS, which is Indonesia's largest shrimp exporter, which is the company whose products were found to have traces of this radioactive isotope at the end of August, which resulted in this very large recall in the US involving lots of US companies too, major retailers. And also BMS had to, according to reporting from the Associated Press, BMS kind of essentially recalled or, you know, called back before it had reached the US some 300 containers. And then there was, I think, 26 containers returned from the US to Indonesia. 18 of these containers were found to have traces of this radioactive isotope. Sources of mine have told me that they think this recent announcement from the FDA is a reaction to a press conference held by Indonesia's food minister, who late September, he held a conference, sounds like he had a bunch of journalists in his office, and was essentially saying, this shrimp is safe to eat due to the very low level of radioactive contamination, which might technically be true, but it's not obviously advisable to eat a product like this over a long period of time, which is why the FDA has these regulations in place. Then sources of mine say that the FDA very quickly, and this is also amid a government shutdown, which shows how seriously this is being taken. The news of this press conference obviously reached the FDA very quickly, and this announcement came out with this yellow list, which is for all of the packers that aren't BMS, who have to have to get their products approved to be radiation free for export to the US. And then BMS is still on the red list, so BMS needs a full audit, like an independent audit. So the Indonesian companies are trying to find someone to do that. And then if BMS is given the green light after this audit, it will go on the yellow list. Yeah, major issues for the sector with all this. It's causing a lot of chaos. And obviously, as a result of this, farm gate prices are dropping rapidly, because it means that processors are backing off. I mean, Indonesia sends probably 70% of its shrimp to the US. It was worth just over $1 billion last year. So it's a major issue for Indonesian exporters. It's an issue for US buyers too, because Indonesia is the third largest source of shrimp for the US behind India and Ecuador. But yeah, it's a very bad situation for companies in Indonesia who are scrambling to try and sort this out. Some contacts of mine are putting a brave face on it, and saying that it can be sorted, and it's kind of galvanizing the industry. The industry's pulling together, which I'm sure is true, but it's a very, very difficult situation for processors and farmers in that country.
And especially for those who have product on the water right now who are uncertain if they need to reroute it, if it's going to need to be destroyed when it gets here or what have you. So it's an evolving story. And Tom, we appreciate you breaking it down for us, and everyone can keep posted on Undercurrent News to keep the latest on this evolving story.
Before we continue, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wisefish. Running a seafood business means dealing with a lot of moving parts. Farms, catches, production, sales, logistics, each often has its own systems and spreadsheets. Wisefish brings it all together. Purpose-built for aquaculture and seafood companies, Wisefish connects biological and financial data so you can see costs, yields, and profitability clearly. The platform tracks feed, treatments, biomass growth, mortality, labor, and equipment costs, then ties it all to harvest and sales planning. Instead of spending time reconciling reports and checking for errors, your team can focus on what matters, making smart, timely decisions that drive growth. Trusted by seafood businesses worldwide, WiseFish is how the industry moves from guesswork to visibility. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. Joining us now on the pod is the one and only Barb Dean Simmons, back from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, where she reported from the Fishery Council Canada's annual general meeting last week. Barb, the theme of this year's meeting, accessing global markets in turbulent waters. Wow. They weren't like, but beating around the bush. They were just nailing it right in the head there. Turbulent waters. Let's go right into it.
Yeah, this was heavyweight stuff, and I gotta say, it was a jam-packed day of speeches, presentations, panel discussions. My brain was tired at the end of the 12 hours, but oh man, the stories that are coming out of there and the insight that they shared was just amazing. So to start, it was the annual conference of the Fisheries Council of Canada. That's the group that advocates for the wild capture fishery in Canada. And there were 175 delegates to this year's convention, which was held at the Chateau Laurier, October 1st and 2nd. And that's just a few steps from Parliament Hill. Executives and CEOs in the room were from companies like Ocean Choice International, Highliner, Clearwater Seafoods, Icewater Seafoods, Canfisco, and groups like the Lobster Council of Canada, the Atlantic Groundfish Council, and the Underwater Harvesters Association of British Columbia. Remember, we export gooey duck to China. So, as you noted, this year's theme was accessing global markets in turbulent waters. And for that, the Fisheries Council had an impressive lineup of speakers and panelists who weighed in on the challenges facing Canadian seafood exporters in light of the quickly changing dynamics around global trade. So, among those speakers, we had Ian Burney, Canada's former ambassador to Japan, Steve Verhelle, Canada's chief trade negotiator from 2017 to 21, and he led the negotiations that delivered the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. And we had Dominic Barton, Canada's ambassador to China from 2019 to 2021. So people with loads of experience and insight into global trade. One of the highlights, and I wrote about this in the blog last week during the conference, Barton, in his keynote speech on Thursday morning, he offered some great insights on seafood opportunities in China for Canadian exporters. Some of the takeaways from that were short term, the Chinese economy is struggling. We've written about that. They've had a real estate meltdown, and customers are kind of shy about spending a lot of money, but thankfully, Chinese consumers have also been saving, and he says there's about $22 trillion sitting in savings accounts in China right now. So long term, he's really positive about the potential for increased consumer consumption in China. And one of the quotes I pulled from him was, "There are 4 billion emerging consumers in the system today, and 65% of them will be in Asia by 2023. And it's the Chinese middle class that's moving that economy." So when people ask me what's the next China, I tell them the next China is China. And that really resonated with people in the room. I know everybody was mentioning that particular quote after his speech. Yeah. But he also said to win in China, Canadian seafood exporters have to do a better job promoting their brands or even rebranding and developing relationships with major retailers in China. And so some of the details on his presentation are among those blog items that I posted during the conference. And honestly, Amanda, there was so much information jam-packed into that one day of back-to-back presentations. It was started at 8 o'clock in the morning. It went till about 6 in the evening.
Yeah, I
And
saw you going all day. I was like, oh my gosh, again, Barb is a machine.
so for me, one of the most insightful was the panel discussion on Thursday afternoon that featured two of Canada's former ambassadors to Japan and China, Iceland's current ambassador to Canada, and Canada's Deputy Minister of Global Affairs Canada for the Indo-Pacific file. So that panel discussion was loaded, simply loaded, like baked crab with cheese and bacon in a shell dressing, with information about how Canada-US negotiations around USMCA might play out to the steps that Canada is taking and should take to reduce its level of dependence on the US market. So that was the focus of my deep dive story that published today at Undercurrent News. And thanks to that great trade data on the Undercurrent News site, I was able to put some context in that story with those trade charts that show how Canadian seafood is moving out to the rest of the world. And there's more to come. I mean, this event, I've just scratched the surface, and there's more to come. I've got some story ideas gelling from the presentations that happened in the room, and involving some side chats I had with folks in the industry during a reception on the first night of the conference. So I'll have more on that. It's going to keep me busy for at least another few days, and so stay tuned at
Oh, I'm sure.
undercurrent.com.
Yeah, you got to hear from my old boss, John Sackton. So I'm excited to hear that coverage. But again, links to Barb's coverage can be found in our show notes. So thanks, Barb.
Before we get to the fun stuff that I know Amanda has planned,
Sushi Bear wasn't fun enough for you, Lauren?
It was. But I want to share a new way for you to keep up with your Undercurrent News data. We've just launched The Market Current, a new weekly video series breaking down the latest seafood pricing trends from across the globe. Each episode takes you through key market movements, data highlights, and what's driving the shifts we're seeing in Undercurrent's price assessment. It's a quick visual way to stay informed.
Take a listen to this clip from this week.
You know, when the reciprocal tariffs were announced April 2nd, I think, you know, people felt like shrimp was going to shoot up. And it took a little while to do it, but it's doing it now. You know, what happened was the inventory here in the U.S. Was front-loaded. So we saw imports for the first half of the year through July, through June, be at, you know, record levels. And that put a little bit of a temper on people's expectations on prices. But it's not only having shrimp here in the US, it's having the right forms and the right sizes. And once that started to filter through the industry, I think that's when the reality of higher costs really set in.
And finally, we'll leave you with our Listen to Us Drool segment. It seems like just yesterday we were talking about the New York restaurant serving a 3-foot long lobster roll. Now I've got another New York joint to add to our seafood eat food wish list. A Long Island restaurant called Claudio's Waterfront is offering a $120 Bloody Mary served with a whole Maine lobster hanging over the rim.
How big are these glasses? I have seen some over-the-top Bloody Marys, but I have never seen one with a whole lobster in it.
Plus 8 pieces of shrimp and some,
Plus.
yeah, 8 pieces of shrimp and some bacon strips, just for good measure. Apparently, they've had it on their menu for a while, but it just recently blew up on TikTok. The restaurant owner told the New York Post that they're selling anywhere now from 20 to 25 a week. That's crazy, isn't it?
I've got plenty of questions here. Is this drink acting as your meal as well? It has to be. Do
Yeah,
they
I think,
serve
right?
your drink with a fork and knife? Can you ask for a side of butter?
Yeah, these are all great questions. Our seafood e-food tour. We gotta check it out.
Yes. Well, let's add another stop to that road trip because I have one more mouth-watering seafood dish that made headlines this week. You and I have been to T-Mobile Park to see the Seattle Mariners play, so we've already feasted on some great and unique ballpark food there.
Crispy crickets, yum.
I was going to say Alaska Pollock.
That too.
Well, the Mariners are in postseason, and the good folks at T-Mobile Park have introduced some new menu items to entice fans. And for seafood lovers, that's the new claws and caviar dish, which is Pacific snow crab claws in a souvenir helmet served with caviar creme fraiche dip, found in section 187.
All right, before we go, a final word from our sponsor, Wise Fish. From egg to plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses in aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies worldwide, including Tassel and Niels Spaer, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and make smarter financial decisions. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.